Blow the horns, go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
Keith fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Rosa! I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only podcast giving away tickets to this year's BCS Championship game. Tom, I'm glad we delayed the recording this week because I was originally disappointed walking away from the game. But upon reflection, I think the glass is more than half full, at least relative to our performance Saturday night. What did you see, and how are you grading the Tide?
You know, I have to agree with you. Initially, after the ball game, I was like, this has to be one of the most boring games that I have seen, in besides maybe the Ole Miss game this year. You know, there really wasn't a whole lot to be excited about. But after I thought about it, we did play a 7-2 football team in the SEC, that, as a friend of mine said, is on the rise. It is a team that has not consistently been able to pass the ball, but they have been very successful running the ball, playing stiff defense, and controlling the clock. And how we were going to respond after that second loss. We both thought this was going to be a close game. To win by 20 points against a 7-2 SEC team, we have to call it for what it is. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I agree. I think we played with a lot of energy. I think we played hard. We took a 30-3 point lead in the game. The game was really never in question after about midway through the first quarter. We could have folded, or we could have come out disappointed or despondent after the LSU game, but I think we came out with some energy, and we played with urgency from the start. We came out with no huddle from the start, drove only for a field goal, but that just seemed to set the tempo for the game.
It did, and we can go into this more when we talk about the offensive side of the ball, but it was good to see a wrinkle. It was good to see something a little different that we had not seen from this team.
That didn't look high schoolish, right?
Right.
All right, Kerryson in the offense. What did you see when we had the ball?
You know, I think offensively, it was a story of big plays. And, you know, it's really hard to dissect this performance offensively because, I mean, we scored 2 touchdowns on one play. And, you know, we had another touchdown that was...
We had two one-play touchdowns. We're not inventing a new scoring system.
No, that's true. We had 2 one-play touchdown drives, and then we had another touchdown drive that was 5 plays, and one of which was 45 yards to Marquise Mays. And mm-hmm. So, you know, suddenly in the second quarter and then at the beginning of the third quarter, this game went from, you know, a close game to a blowout. And so to analyze what this team would have done in the game when they weren't going to win time of possession because of that. And, you know, it was just a story of big plays in this game.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, and I have the benefit of having read just a little bit today, but I think we game plan for success. And we talked about, you know, not seeing specific plays called or not appearing to game plan to take advantage of the defense. And the coaches and several of the players commented that, you know, we knew that we needed to attack the edges, and we did a lot of film work and a lot of study and a lot of prep and how we were going to attack the edges. And so Ingram's screen, it was actually a wide receiver screen. He lined out wide. It wasn't a running back screen, but it was a wide receiver screen where he lined out.
He had not done that all year.
Right. And so we've not seen that sort of variability getting him on the edge. And ironically, it was a 70-yard play, which is Ingram's longest play from scrimmage in his career, and he just seemed, now we've watched Ingram and we've enjoyed his performance for years now, he just seemed like he was shot out of a cannon. That knee's certainly healthy. I don't think that I've seen him run that fast in his career.
I don't think I have either, and so it begs the question, because we talked about last week, you know, is he healthy? And so if the knee is healthy, what would explain his performances in the past 3 or 4 weeks then? Because on that particular play, he seemed to have a burst a la Trent Richardson that we've never seen from him.
Well, and that's where I go back to the game planning for success. We got him out of the edge with some wide receivers blocking and a team that was stacking the box. We played called to attack that edge where they've been stacking the box, as opposed to we're going to run between the center guard hole and we're just going to do that until we bust a big play. I think part of that was the game planning and the play calling. And along that same vein, on Julio's end around, and
also attacking the edge.
Attacking the edge, and you and I have lamented Julio running the end around, and last year he got hurt on that type of play. Every year, and he's run it two or three times this year, every time Julio's run an end around or a reverse this year, it's come out of the Wildcat package. And so he ran it out of a traditional setback quarterback situation. And I have the benefit of having read a little bit, but you know, we had some zone blocking techniques in place for this play. So I do think it was a new play. I do think it was a new wrinkle, not just Julio running an end around, but the specifics of the setup and the execution. So there again, that bodes well for this team that we're not just running this run a wide set at the field goal to try to trick somebody. That we're actually doing some game study and putting some wrinkles in with the plays that we have called.
I agree, and I guess what I have to say to be consistent with my theme all year is that's great, but where was that a week ago?
Well, I don't disagree with that. And it's kind of the old saying, the best time to plant a shade tree is 20 years ago. The second best time to do it is today. And so where has it been? Well, it hasn't been before now, but it was now. And that's the next best time that it can be. And if that's setting the stage for future games, then so be it.
I agree with that. Something else that I was not aware of this in the week leading up to the game, but apparently Marquise Mays commented that there had been a lot of bulletin board material from the Mississippi State football team going into this game.
Yep.
And, you know, the quote was, they were talking all week about how if they hit us in the mouth, we would just quit. And you and I talked about how this team did not seem hungry enough against LSU. LSU wanted it more. I don't know if it was a bulletin board material, but a few of our players, and we did have some veteran leadership, they seemed to want it pretty badly in the game.
Yeah, they did, and I heard that there had been some of that material as well. And we speculated here that, you know, we have a 7-2 team that's excited and a 7-2 team that's disappointed. If they come out and, that puts us in a bad spot. I expected it to be a much closer game because we could come out flat. I think that, in Mullen, I would give the same coaching advice as let's go out and punch them in the mouth and
make them quit.
Yeah, and make them quit because they're going to come out flat. And that just wasn't the case. We didn't come out flat at all. I want to talk a little bit about the offensive line. Fluker, McCullough got the start and looked like he got a little banged up. And so Fluker came back in and reclaimed his spot in that situation. And Barrett Jones turned an ankle early in the game, and Anthony Steen came in. I think he missed a couple of blocks, a couple of assignments early on, but he seemed to perform relatively well the rest of the way. What did you think?
I thought he did play pretty well after those first few plays. And I think he's going to be a good player. Joe Pendery's very high on him as far as, you know, feels like he has the tools. I didn't see the problems with the pass protection in the game that we had talked about against LSU.
Right, right.
It seemed like there had been some corrections between the center and left guard, which was good to see. But one other thing that kind of jumped out at me, you know, as far as looking at the stats and the numbers, which I like to do, is, you know, if you take out the big play to Julio, which, you know, that accounted for 56 yards of the rushing tonight, or rushing in the game, which was 200 yards, we finished the game without that play. We finished the game averaging under 3 yards a carry. And so to your point about rushing to the edge, Mississippi State looked a little undersized to our offensive line. We looked like we had a size advantage, but yet we still kind of went on the edges. When we did go up the middle, you know, Mark Ingram, who had to carry the load for Trent Richardson, you know, in the game, he had 18 rushes for 64 yards. If you take away his lost yards, he finishes 18 carries for 53 yards. That's still something that concerns me.
Well, I just think teams, and Mississippi State's an example, and teams are just coming in hell-bent to stop the run, and they're talented teams. They game plan well. They have good coaches, and they're able to do that. And so, you know, you have to pound the middle to keep them honest, and, you know, we made our money on the edges. But I just think it's a good team dedicating themselves, selling out to stop something, and they're going to be able to do it.
Well, that's I guess it just goes back to, we talked about the comparison of this year's team to last year's team and establishing their identity. We definitely are not a team yet that was able to pound teams into submission with running the ball, controlling the clock, having long drives. Maybe this coaching staff and the game planning and what they did on the edges and trying to manufacture the big play, because, you know, Chris Walsh, who's, you know, a great reporter for Rivals.com, has talked numerous times about the lack of big plays or explosive plays that we've had this year. Maybe that did help to maybe open up the middle a little bit, because as you look at the numbers, you know, we had four plays over 40 yards in the game, mm-hmm. and that's huge.
Yeah, that was our most big explosive play since Duke, so it was significant.
Against a great opponent, though.
Right, against a much better opponent. And, you know, I guess when you have the long scores, you don't need as many of the pounding out and you know, move the change score or drive. So I think that's good. Hey, one of the things I want to touch on before we flip to defense is A.J. McCarron. He came out, I know he was only 2 for 5, but he just seems to have a gunslinger mentality. He comes out just flinging the ball and does so, I think, with good accuracy. I know Saban got onto him, and it got onto him pretty hard, it seemed like, as he came off on a third down. He had given up a sack the play before and almost was sacked on this play, and just seemed to roll out and off balance, just chunk the ball down the field. And I think Saban was a little disappointed about, you know, protect my football. It could have been picked off, but there's a little bit of me that says, hey, the fact that he was able to roll out and then willing to pull the trigger on the ball down the field, I'm excited about that. You know, it could be a Brett Favre type situation where he's going to throw two picks, but three spectacular touchdowns. A little bit of the bad with the good. What do you think? I think A.J. McCarron may have some future.
I think McCarron has a good arm. I think McCarron's going to have the mobility that McElroy does not bring to the table, because, you know, this team has not tried to move the pocket. And you've talked about the lack of doing that in the play calling. There has not been... We can count on one hand how many times McElroy has moved the pocket, and it's just because the pressure was coming.
Right.
It wasn't because it was a design moving the pocket. I have to tell you, on that particular series with Saban and looking into that a little bit, you know, the quotes from Saban was that he wasn't upset with him on that third down play. He was upset with him on the second down play. And so what was interesting about that is he talked a lot of football technique in talking about this, but he talked about the fact before the sack, okay,
mm-hmm.
that he did not take what the defense gives him, and that he made a decision before it ever happened that he had a touchdown pass and that he was going to be able to get the ball to Julio. When there was a guy over the top of Julio who was open, that he should have completed the pass to.
Okay.
So what's interesting about pointing this out is we talk about Saban's quarterbacks and protect my football and let the defense win the ball game and don't make mistakes. And so as we talk about A.J. McCarron for a second, that will be an interesting dichotomy as we go into next year. If he ends up being the guy, it will be interesting to that whole thing of him wanting to make the plays and Saban saying, no, he's going to be pulling the reins back on A.J. McCarron all of next year if he ends up being the guy.
Well, you can't push a rope. And so if he's pulling in, that's easier than try to feed the reins to a player that may not be so willing to take them. So we'll have to see how that plays out. Why don't we flip the field to defense? What did you see from our stop squad?
You know, I guess the first thing that I have to touch on is I look at the defensive numbers is I think we have a misprint in the stats, because the stats show that we had 5 sacks in the game. and we went into the game with only 11 sacks on the year, which was last in the SEC. And so I guess I need to go back and watch the tape a few times to find out how we got 5 sacks.
I did a double take when I saw that as well. Damian Square recorded two of the sacks, and I don't have the inventory in front of me, the other players. But yeah, we got five sacks on a team that, quite frankly, ran the ball a disproportionate amount of the time. So we were very efficient and effective getting after the quarterback and recording sacks when there were opportunities. If you take the number of times that they passed the ball and you take five sacks and two picks, that's seven passing situations from a team that wasn't going to pass a whole lot. We made big plays defensively.
We did.
Against Florida, you know, just to give an example of how Mississippi State wants to run the ball, and when they have success running the ball, that's about all you're going to see. Against Florida, they had a ratio of 51 run plays to 7 pass plays in the game, and that's how they beat Florida. And so when you have a team that not only is so dedicated but capable of running the ball, even when you know that they're going to run the ball, the fact that we held them to about 70 yards below their average, that's hats off to the defense.
It is. And, you know, I will say in digging into the numbers, you know, Chris Relf, the starting quarterback, is where we got our five sacks. So none of those came against the backup and mop-up duty. And so it did come against the running quarterback.
So they weren't garbage sacks.
No, they were true sacks. And, you know, his stat line is he completed 8 of 16 passes, but he had 13 rushes for 33 yards. So the only reason I point that out real quick is if you take his 13 rushes away, Mississippi State still had 36 rushing attempts. Okay? And so I think of Chris Relf's 13 rushing attempts, at least half of those were affecting the quarterback either in coverage or he just had to pull the ball down and run.
Yes.
And so even if you add those in, it's still pretty impressive. And something else to mention here, you know, just to kind of give credit where credit's due, Courtney Upshaw had one of those, who I think he has responded with the tenacity to his injuries more so than anybody else on the defense.
He's not let his injuries impact him to
his performance to the degree, or lack thereof.
Sure.
But one of the sacks came from Daquan Menzie. And so I just want to mention this for a second because, you know, Daquan Menzie was not there in the LSU game.
Right.
And we talked about Javi and Kareem, and we talked about their ability to get tackles for loss and their ability. The coach having confidence in them that if I send you on the edge, you can disguise the blitz because you got a little maturity here. And then when you come, you've got the speed to get there, execute, and make the play. So I find it interesting real quick that Daquan Menzie gets a sack, which he had shown us the ability to do earlier in the season, and we didn't have that because he wasn't there in the LSU game.
Yeah, let me riff on that a little bit. You know, Menzie's playing that star position, which is where Javi played and got his sack. So the fact that from the star position we're getting that sack. Maybe we're turning the page in the playbook to run some of those plays. To, you know, it's been Robert Lester stepping up, or Phelan stepping up from the safety or the corner position. The fact that you were running it from the star position, maybe that's representative of us getting back to some of the schemes and some of the plans from last year.
Well, it makes you think that they have the confidence in Daquan Menzie to do that. And they don't have the confidence in a Phelan Jones yet. So it makes me think he has not stepped ahead of Daquan Menzie. It had to be an injury situation.
Right. No, that's fair. Although Phelan did start ahead of Drake Kirkpatrick, and he was held out for about a quarter and a half for disciplinary reasons. And we don't know anything more than that. But, you know, Phelan came in and acquitted himself well at that position. So that's good news for the balance of this season, and of course building into the future.
It is, and just to touch on Menzie for another second, because, you know, we were tied for second to last in the SEC in tackles for loss as a team as well, which is the two areas that we just have been lacking this year as a defense. He had two tackles for loss. So the other thing, just to
in
mention,
in addition to the sack,
yeah. So in addition to the sack, he made three plays in the backfield, and we haven't been averaging three a ball game.
No.
And so that just shows the impact that this junior college transfer apparently brings to our defense in that star position.
Yeah, that's true. And so next year when he has a year in the system and a year away from his Achilles injury. He could be quite a potent player. Hey, I want to give a little bit of kudos to the defensive back, and I guess I'm not sure exactly why, but this has sort of been my pet position this season. We exited the game. We picked up two picks on the game Saturday, so we exit the game with 17 picks on the year. That ties us with three other teams for the national lead in picks, and Robert Lester himself has seven of those 17, and he's tied with two other players for the national lead in picks. So Robert Lester, a player who was a little bit of special teams at best last year, coming in fighting for a position, has certainly acquitted himself well. We've talked about him growing up in front of us. He's a rising star. And in our defensive backfield, who we thought would maybe be the weakness of the defense, I think it's official. I guess it's late to go out on a limb here. It's a thick branch now, but the secondary is the strength of the defense.
The secondary is the strength of the defense, and you know. But you and I talked about this with a friend of ours after this ball game, and what I still can't understand is why we rely so much on the zone with these young cornerbacks. You know, in speaking of Dre and Milner, you know, why we don't just play more man. You know, a quote that Saban had after this ball game, which was interesting, because it goes back to, okay, what was really different? Daquan Menzie was different, but what else was different in this ball game? Okay, because a quote when, you know, they asked Saban about the pass rush, and he said that was a real key to the game. It was difficult to play a lot of coverage because of the quarterback's ability to run. So we played mostly zone. And when they got their one touchdown at the end of the ball game, it came on a blown assignment on the zone. And so just curious what your thoughts are here is that, once again, coaches know best. They played mostly zone, and he tells us that they played mostly zone. When we've been talking about, you know, you got killed against LSU because you, on those couple plays, because you didn't do it right all the time. Why do you think we're still relying on playing mostly zone? Because it worked. I mean, my point real quick is we got five sacks today. What was different about affecting the quarterback today was LSU's offensive line just so much better that we couldn't get to the quarterback? I mean, two running quarterbacks. We don't get to LSU's quarterback. We get to this guy with five sacks, and we play zone in both situations. What's up with that?
Well, you know, and this is the hard fault analysis that all our listeners come to listen. I don't know. I don't have an answer to that question. Maybe we can be more variable in zone, and we can give a lot more looks and a lot more appearances in zone. And so maybe, you know, that certainly helps, you know, confuse an opposing quarterback. But in terms of, we've seen the zone fail, and we can go back and run off the plays where the zone has failed us, and it's either cost us ball games or it certainly made ball games closer than they needed to be. I don't know why we don't rotate some man-to-man in and be a little more aggressive with our coverages. I don't have an answer for that.
Well, because just to bring our listeners into the conversation we had offline about this, you know, we were fortunate last year to have three cornerbacks. We had three starting SEC cornerbacks. We had Marquise Johnson. Between him and Kareem and Javi, I think last year's defense could take those three guys and say, get right up on their faces, chuck them at the line of scrimmage, they're physical cornerbacks, and we're going to get to the quarterback. This year, like you talked about, maybe they don't have the physical nature to be able to chuck the 6'4", 6'5", receivers at the line of scrimmage, because we have played a lot of them. And so last year's team was like the whole put you on an island and you just go take care of business. Well, this year, I don't think it's a lack of talent, just be experience in the system.
You could be answering part of your own question is last year we were getting pass rush and we were getting after the quarterback and we were getting sacks, and this year we're not. So, you know, to play man on man and continue to keep a DB in man on man when we're not getting after the quarterback, maybe there's a greater risk there than playing zone and when you're not able to get to the quarterback and affect the quarterback. That's the closest thing to, you know, an analyzed response that I have, and I don't know if that's what it is or that's just what we're seeing. On special teams, what lit your candle?
You know, there was a few performances that I thought was pretty good on special teams. you know, we were able to flip the field a little bit in the punt return and kickoff return categories. You know, Marquise Mays had that punt return that was called back, you know, with the blocking in the back. But that just shows what you talked about him, you know, reading his blocks and growing into that position. You know, Cade Foster, you know, had a huge field goal, you know, of 45 yards at the end of the first quarter, which, you know, Jeremy Shelley, I mean, I guess what I mean by that is we attempted three field goals. We made three field goals.
Yes.
And so, once again, like we talked about with those two first-time guys in this role, 3 for 3, hey, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not disappointed at that. And so my notes on special teams are pretty much the same. I thought Marquise Mays definitely demonstrated some spark. It was good to see. Even if one of them had to come back with maybe a questionable or close call, you know, he executed well, showed himself as a threat at the position. You know, Cole Foster, the big kick, Cade Foster, the big kick, like you said, that was impressive. And I thought the punting was relatively decent. So, you know, nothing huge either way on special teams. They came out and executed, and I thought that was fine. What were your takeaways?
You know, I guess the takeaways here is I think we played with a little more toughness. We showed the ability to execute. I didn't see as many blown assignments. It seemed like the focus of – it seems like Coach Saban has really gotten, or we hope that he's really gotten into this team after the LSU game of, guys, make your own path. It is your job to get better, and it goes back to getting better every day. I think a few players got better.
No, I agree. I think that, you know, my takeaway from this game is that, you know, we picked ourselves off the carpet. We could have been flat, and we weren't. So we certainly responded, and I think we showed the markings of what I would consider a dominant team, and especially with the big plays. We went out and clubbed a 7-2 Bulldogs team that, you know, it's an SEC team, and to go out and club them the way we did, you know, Mark Ingram's, you know, long pass play and Julio's run and Mays's pass and Mays in the return game. We had 5 sacks and 2 picks. I just think, you know, those are the hallmarks of a dominant team and a dominant performance. That's my takeaway from the game, that we rebounded, played with a lot of heart, a lot of passion, and really put the big plays on the board. And that's something that our future opponents, that they need to look at, that this is a team that has not rolled over with the second loss.
They haven't quit.
Exactly. So, Tom, who are you giving your game ball to?
You know, I wouldn't consider this guy a headliner. He might not be under the radar like you like us to do with our mini game ball theme. But this game ball for me has to go to Marquise Mays. If you take out the 80-plus yard punt return on the penalty call, he would have finished for 250 all-purpose yards. And we talk about we've been fortunate during our wins this year that we've had the three-headed horsemen of Trent Richardson and Mark Ingram and Julio Jones, who've accounted for 500 yards between the three of them. Well, he would have had 250. He still finished with a 170. And it was all phases. I mean, it was, you know, almost 100 yards of return yardage without that.
Right.
He had the big spark on the 45-yard touchdown. And that 45-yard touchdown was a la Trent Richardson, Arkansas last year, where several guys had chances on him. He could have easily gone out of bounds, but it was like he talked about after the game. You know, Coach Saban talked about dominating your opponent.
Yep.
Well, he's one of the smallest guys on the field, and on that touchdown play, he just willed himself that I was not going down, and he scored a touchdown because of it.
Yeah, no, I think Marquise Mays had a great game, and at least you went, newspaper term, at least you went below the fold. So I'll go with that. In terms of my mini game ball, amazing how you called this, that I was going to go with this guy. I don't know, we've been married too long, I guess, or something. That's a joke, folks. I'm going with Anthony Steen as my mini game ball. He came in the first couple plays. He had some missed assignments, but I thought he played well. This was his first playing opportunity. He's played before in backup, you know, mop-up duty when we bring in the second.
But not with the first team.
But not with the first. And so, you know, I'm not calling him a starter, but this is his first performance with the first teamers when the game is still live, when the game is still on. It's not a foregone conclusion. But I want to call Anthony Steen representative. You know, we played in the game on situation when we're playing our first teamers. We actually engaged seven different linemen when you count Fluker and McCullough, the rest of the starting line, and then Anthony coming in for Barrett Jones. We played seven linemen, quote unquote, with the starting group. And there's been times where you know we've gone the whole season and only played five, and we've had drop offs. You know, when you look at J.B. Klausner missing time with Taylor Britt in, we were a different team. So the fact that we went seven deep,
noticeably, yeah,
noticeably a different team, yes. And so when you go seven deep with your first unit, as it were, I'm giving hats off to in the person of Anthony Steen, but in the spirit of Joe Pendry and the depth that we have on the offensive line.
Well, I agree with that, and you know something else to mention on that is, you know, he is a true freshman, and so what's key about Anthony Steen is
He's a redshirt.
Oh, is he a redshirt?
He's a redshirt.
Well, you know, true freshman or redshirt, you know, just for him to be able to step in and play and not have a lot of drop-off. Because like you said, when we've played offensive linemen in the past, they've been a fifth-year senior that didn't see the field for a reason, and, oh, we have to play them now.
And then there's been the significant, you know, game impact and drop-off. So that bodes well for the Tide in terms of our development across the offensive line. So looking ahead, we have a Thursday night game. It's a short week prep this week, but we invite Georgia State over to town, and Bill Curry makes a return appearance to Tuscaloosa. What are your thoughts about this week's game?
You know, my first thoughts are is I hate that we have joined the ranks of high school football to play on Thursday night. As much as I enjoy the media and the, you know, deal with ESPN and what it's meant for the SEC, and we've got five or six SEC games on every weekend, I've always kind of laughed at the teams of the Boise States of the world that have played on Friday night because they couldn't get a good time slot on Saturday. So my first comment is I think it's pretty pitiful that we're playing on Thursday night and that ESPN is actually broadcasting this game against Georgia State. All that being said, I don't know a whole lot about Georgia State except for Bill Curry. And except for Star Jackson. Is he going to be the starting quarterback against them?
I know earlier in the season he was in Bill Curry's doghouse, and he was not the starting quarterback. I've not studied their roster, and I've not studied you know how they're playing and how they're performing, other than this is their first year performing. I think the fact that we're playing on Thursday night, it's not like some programs that play on Thursday night, and Boise State played on a Tuesday night a week or so ago because they were desperate for TV coverage. That's not who we are, and that's not what we are. We are playing on Thursday night so that we have more time to prepare for the Auburn game the subsequent Friday.
I can appreciate that. I just don't like the fact of us playing football on Thursday
night. Well, let's make no mistake as to why we're doing that, okay? And so I don't think it's pathetic as much as I think that given the circumstance of playing Auburn that we're taking advantage of the circumstances as much as we can to give our players more rest and to allow our coaching staff more prep for the game. And to be honest with you, I would say that we're spending probably 60-40% of our time, you know, 60% of our time prepping for the Auburn game as opposed to Georgia State. I think we're going to come out, we're going to be significantly more athletic than they are, and I think that we're going to come out and be very vanilla. I think it's a 48-3 or 48-7 game. We're not going to run up a Wisconsin 83 type score just because we can. And what I would love to see, and we won't see this, but what I would love to see is that we start the game with our second teamers and go from there.
That would be nice, and we definitely will not see that. You know, even, you know, I guess to touch on that for a second, you know, we even noticed in this game, you know, in this last game against Mississippi State, that we would have liked to have seen the backups a lot sooner than we did. We were kind of surprised that, you know, 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter and we had not seen the starters, you know, come out of the game in earnest. You know, we saw a couple, but not really the wholesale changes. And in looking at some of the stats, I guess we won't see Star Jackson because he's only attempted 9 passes on the year. So yeah. we will not see him as the starter in this ball game.
Not as a starter. I wouldn't be surprised if they worked him in one way or the other, just out of some respect to the fact that he played at Alabama, and you could certainly look for our players to step over and give him a high five and whatnot before, during, and after the game. But yeah, I think the Tide will roll. I don't think the game will ever be in question, and I think it'll be a great opportunity for the fans. I think tickets will be available. It's a great opportunity for fans who don't get to see Alabama play in person to go, and not only that, but to see the younger guys play. We're not gonna burn any red shirts, but we're gonna see a lot of the young guys get a chance to play, and we're gonna see what we got in McCarron. We're gonna see what we got in some of the young receivers and young players, and I think
I'd
it's
like
just
to see
be,
some of the young defensive players.
It's gonna be we're gonna see a lot of energy, a lot of excitement. Because this is their time to get out on the field and play, and I think that's going to be fun to watch.
It will be, and I guess one of my primary focuses will have to be on Jarrell Harris.
All right, I'm going to let that go. I thought we said younger players. All right, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening, and roll Tide. Jarrell Harris.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast giving away BCS championship tickets. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate what you're playing against and make your ass quit. That's our trademark. That's our MO with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Say something, Tommy, with your mouth full of pizza.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Nice. Great. I have shit to edit now.